We'll talk with three guests this hour with different perspectives or expertise on the Confederate flag controversy, which was reignited last week following the mass shooting of 9 African Americans by a white gunman inside a historic black church in South Carolina. The Confederate flag flies on the grounds of the South Carolina state capitol, and now the state's governor is calling for its removal. Should it be removed? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, June 23rd. We will start our discussion with a history professor. We will later hear from a guest who would like the flag to remain where it is as a symbol of the cultural heritage of the South. And then later in the hour, another guest who says it should be removed because it is racist. And we will wonder what you think and what questions you have at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We will start with our first guest, John Koski, the historian at the American Civil War Museum in Richmond. He is the author of The Confederate Battle Flag, America's Most Embattled Emblem. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Thank you for being with us. So when was what we call the Confederate flag first used?
In 1861, as a battle flag of the Confederacy's most well-known army, the Army of Northern Virginia, which was Robert E. Lee's army eventually, and became a battle flag that was used throughout the Confederacy. It was a flag that was used for orienting armies. It was a flag of the soldier, and as all battle flags eventually do, it became very important to the men who fought under it and died under it, and has been venerated, therefore, as a memorial to the soldiers who fought and died under it by subsequent generations. But even by the end of the war, it was emblazoned onto the Confederate national flag. So by 1863, it was not only a battle flag of the soldier, but a very much a symbol of the Confederate nation. And because it did not get packed away and furled away forever in 1865 when the Confederacy died and the war ended, it just continued to have a life of its own and take on additional meanings in 150 years since.
Larry on Facebook says, during the program, it would be educational to distinguish the Confederate battle flag, which is apparently what we showed in the image on our Facebook post, and the Confederate national flag, a.k.a. the stars and bars.
Right. Good question, and boy, I won't take up all your time and try and make that distinction. But yes, the is a great confusion between, really in the name more than anything, people want to call that familiar blue cross flag on the red field the stars and bars. Far from it. That was, in some ways, the antithesis of the stars and bars. The original Confederate national flag, which very much resembled the U.S. stars and stripes with horizontal white and red bars and then a blue field, just like the stars and stripes with stars in it. And that stars and bars was chosen originally as a national flag very deliberately because it mimicked the stars and stripes. And over time, in the next year or so, the first year of the war, it fell into disfavor both practically, because on the battlefield, when it was used as a battle flag, it resembled the stars and stripes, and obviously it didn't work very well to distinguish your own armies and led to any number of friendly fire incidents. So it was replaced by the what we call the Confederate battle flag, the blue cross flag, as a battle flag. And eventually it was replaced as a national flag because as Confederate nationalism grew, as Confederate Southerners began to think of themselves, white Southerners began to think of themselves as Confederates, not just Southern Americans, they wanted a flag that spoke to that confirmed independence. And it didn't make any sense to have a national flag that looked so much like the old one. So, but in addition to what Larry points out, the national flag of the Confederacy changed from the stars and bars. It was rejected as the national flag in 1863 and replaced by a flag that was the battle flag as we know it today, emblazoned on a field of white. Just that. So by 1863, the national flag of the Confederacy incorporated what we today call the Confederate flag.
And we don't have a lot of time with you, and I wish we had more, but why is it flying on the grounds of the South Carolina State Capitol today?
There's a couple of answers to that. One is why it's there and not on the dome, because, of course, as I think everyone knows, there was a long, drawn-out controversy over the presence of the flag on the state capitol, which had gone up in 1962, ostensibly because of the Civil War centennial and in progress, but also, of course, it was the same time as the Civil Rights Movement. And it flew over the dome, and despite many efforts to bring it down and long, drawn-out controversies, it resulted in a compromise in 2000 that took it off of the dome and brought it down instead, more to eye level, thus more obvious, but contextualized by having it in the vicinity of the Confederate monument, therefore speaking to its heritage as a symbol of the soldier. But even then, the compromise left a lot of people unsatisfied, those who wanted it on the dome all along as a symbol of how important it is to the state, and those who said, it's even worse now because it's at eye level and everyone can see it. It's there, and Governor Haley addressed this yesterday, how important that flag is to some, obviously not all, South Carolinians. It's a part of the state's heritage, and she was quite clear in saying that while we're bringing it down, because all the reasons she named, it's still part of the state's heritage, and we're not saying it's dishonored when we bring it down. We're bringing it down because of its other meanings, primarily racism and resistance to civil rights in the 50s and 60s, that has tarnished it.
So the title of your book is The Confederate Battle Flag, America's Most Embattled Emblem. Why is it most embattled?
Well, at the time that I wrote the book, it was a wave of controversies going on regarding just what we're talking about today, the question of what is its proper place on the American landscape? What does it mean? And clearly it means different things to different people. That's why we're talking about it. That's why we're arguing about it. There is no single fixed meaning, generally speaking. Each person has a different concept of what it means, and therefore what should be done with it. So over the past 50 years since the Civil Rights Movement, we as a country have been debating what its place should be on the public commemorative landscape. And it's a messy process. It's a consensus compromise process, but it obviously it's an important one as we decide what belongs on the landscape. And it's embattled because that name, by the way, derives from an exhibit that we did at the museum in the 90s from which this book grows. Mm-hmm. But it's embattled because a flag that had once stood more or less without opposition, but that without opposition, without vocal opposition, was during the Jim Crow era. Not coincidentally, when it was a major part of Southern symbolic life at a time when the African-American voice was deliberately, forcibly muted. And since the Civil Rights era, African-Americans do have a strong voice in public life and the symbolism, it has come under attack as people who never really felt that it belonged in over state capitals and in places of sovereignty have had an opportunity to say so.
Yeah.
And those who, and you'll hear this from your subsequent guests, it's the last half century has been marked by a kind of rollback, if you will, of the flag's presence on the Southern symbolic landscape as more people have been brought into that process of deciding what should and should not be on the landscape.
Yeah, well, it is not just on the landscape, but apparently since this debate has been reignited, it's been pointed out that elements of the Confederate flag are actually incorporated into seven other Southern states' flags. So,
really, I know Georgia, Mississippi, obviously, which held a referendum in 2001, which by a 2-to-1 ratio that people voted to keep the flag that had been adopted in 1894, which has the battle emblem in it. And then Florida and Alabama have suggestions of the flag with red crosses. I'm not sure if it's ever really been determined that they how strongly linked that is to the Confederacy. And what are the other four?
We don't have time to go through them all, but they are listed on some news accounts, and perhaps they're not, you know, they're just hints or elements of it. But in any case, I guess the question was this this reignited debate is not just in South Carolina.
No, it's not. And one thing that we has been completely overlooked because of the tragedy in South Carolina is that on Thursday morning, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a very important decision relating to vanity license plates, specifically that of the Sons of Confederate Veterans in Texas, which has like about half a dozen other license plates for the SCV and around other southern states, has the battle emblem on it. And the Supreme Court decided by a 5-4 margin that constitutes government speech and therefore can be regulated by the government. So another facet to all of this is what happens to Confederate flags on vanity plates and into any kind of quasi-political speech on license plates. That's something that's gotten completely eclipsed by the tragedy in South Carolina.
Thank you very much for being with us, John Koski, historian at the American Civil War Museum in Richmond. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are getting different perspectives on the Confederate flag controversy and the reignited debate over whether the Confederate flag should be flying on the grounds of the South Carolina State Capitol. South Carolina's governor is calling for the removal now of the Confederate flag from their state capitol grounds. And we are wondering what you think. Should it be removed? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We just heard from a history professor about the history of the Confederate flag. Now we will hear from a guest who would like the flag to remain where it is. Ben Jones is a spokesperson for the Sons of Confederate Veterans. He is a chair of their heritage operations. He was a two-term Democratic congressman representing Georgia's 4th Congressional District. He is also well known for his portrayal of Cooter Davenport on the television show The Dukes of Hazzard. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much for being with us. So you are a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans.
Yes, ma'am.
The group's mission?
Well, the group, let me first explain who we are. We're direct male descendants of the actual people who fought, you know, for the South. All of my family fought for the South and supported it. And we try to, you know, protect their reputation, and it's our heritage, and we feel very strongly about it. And we've always decried and opposed the misuse of any symbolism of the Confederacy by racist groups and hate groups and white supremacists. And we feel that, you know, it really does represent our heritage, that those folks were our family. They came out on the wrong side of history, I guess. But when in their time, they did what they thought was right, and they did it as with great valor and courage and became legendary in military history for their effort. So we celebrate them as our family. Their pictures are on our walls. Their names are in our Bibles, and we put flowers on their gravestones. It's family to us. It's DNA, and it's a big part of our culture. I know better than most that the flag has been misused by racists because I was in the civil rights movement, and I've opposed those people all of my life, even when it was very dangerous to do so. So we need to put this flag into context. It means different things to different people. There is no doubt it has been used by hateful people for their, you know, those people, you know, we can't account for them. They're just hateful people, and, you know, we saw the worst example of that in Charleston. An insane, deranged, drugged-up young man who, you know, had fallen, you know, just thought that he was going to make a name for himself, I guess. But that was one of the most evil acts I can ever remember. I can remember back to '64 when the Klan bombed during the Civil Rights Movement, when the Klan bombed that church in Birmingham. This is right up there with that, as just the most evil racist act I can remember. And I don't think we should rush to judgment about anything in the aftermath with all this emotion, with the grief. We're still in shock down here. And I don't think we ought to start painting everybody with a broad brush. It's a complicated issue. It's about context, and that flag has been used for many different, just like the American flag, it's been used for many different reasons, some of them not so savory.
Yeah, so South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley is calling for the removal of the Confederate flag from, mm-hmm. from the State House grounds. What is your response to that?
Well, I think it may well happen. That was put there through a long and difficult compromise. It can be argued that the flag should not have been on top of the Capitol to begin with. I understand that. It was a reaction back in the days of segregation. And it was left up there, and I think some people, it was just in a different context. But there was a big fight over that in South Carolina, and there was a great deal of compromise, and the legislature, through a democratic process, folks who were elected sat down and worked out a compromise. It's been moved to a memorial. It is like a museum already. It's there in a memorial at an old monument on the grounds that had been there since the 19th century. So then there's that flag in that context, and there's no intention for it to be inflammatory, but simply a reminder of our very real history and the journey we've all been through together.
Yeah, even if the flag has a very different, very even a positive meaning for you, how do you reconcile that with the very negative feelings that it stirs in so many others?
Well, I think I told you, I mentioned I was in the civil rights movement. I went all the way through that. And, I saw the enormous change that took place in the South. We went down here from being, a lot of the country's never dealt with this. There's a lot of segregation and racism throughout America. The South, however, since in the last 50 years, has come from being a segregated Jim Crow society and very white supremacy and all that stuff to the most biracial society in the world, perhaps. Fastest growing economy. Blacks are returning to the South in record numbers because of the, not only they say because of the quality of life, but because of better race relations. We brought the working together, white and black. I was a congressman working with great people like Andrew Young and John Lewis to bring the Olympics, the International Olympics, to Atlanta. To me, it's context. I was on the Dukes of Hazzard. 30 million people of all colors watched and loved that show every week, and we never got a complaint. That wasn't that long ago. And so this really is a hot-button issue. It's easy to stir people up. I've known the other day, I do this Dukes of Hazzard stuff, and I sold a black guy a Dixie horn for his truck. He loves the show. He has no problem with the flag. He understands it, that hateful people use it. He understands they're just, that's hateful people. And he doesn't let it, get to him or identify. He sees it in a positive context, and a lot of people do. It has been misused, so has the American flag, Native Americans were destroyed. They had genocide committed against them. Well, under that American flag, there have been a lot of bad things done. The American flag's the official flag of the Klan. Way I figured is there's millions of us, good-hearted people who've descended from the Confederacy, who have come through a lot, who work for a biracial society and treat each individual by the content of their character, not by the color of their skin. That overwhelms that handful of crazy people who run around desecrating a whole lot of things. They're evil. They're bad people. They're sick people. We're not. It will probably be voted to be removed. And in some ways, I would say that might be a good thing for Southern heritage because it removes our beloved symbol to many of us. From being a lightning rod for every demagogue that ever came down the pike. That's what's going on. This is an overreaction to a horrible event. And, an NBC poll the other day of the nation says that, this isn't a slam dunk. 49% of the people in the country think leave it up. 49% of the people say take it down. You can see there's a different, major difference of opinion on this, and right now it's running on emotion. My concern is this, that this isn't going to stop here. Last night, Walmart took all its Confederate symbolism. I've never seen any in there. But they took anything that had anything to do with my heritage out of there. You know, Dr. King said, so this is not going to stop. I mean, there's a national plan by a number of groups to eradicate, as one said, every vestige of the Confederacy. And I'm one of those vestiges, you know. That's who I am. And I've seen this thing used in positive ways, and I've seen it used in negative ways, and the overwhelming use of it and meaning of it has been positive. A lot of black folks, this doesn't bother at all. To the black activist, it's a hot-button issue. And it's an easy one to do because, you know, you just make a villain out of all of us, and you say, oh, bad, 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 flag bad, us good. That sort of thinking generates a lot of heat, but it doesn't generate any light about American history, about the very great importance right now, more than ever, of good racial relationships. Dr. King said he had a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners would dine together at the table of brotherhood. We have done that. I have been a part of that, and I have seen that happen. And we've come an awful long way. And this is the sort of thing that just divides people.
Let me take a short pause. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Ben Jones, a spokesperson for the Sons of Confederate Veterans. He is chair of their heritage operations, and he is speaking in favor of the public display of the Confederate flag. And we wonder what you think, what questions you have. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Sheree emails, what other country can the loser of the war still fly the flag in defiance? It is a piece of cloth, like a lot of people like to say. Then removing it shouldn't be a problem. It is truly an act of treason and should be treated as such. Put the flag in the museum where other historical artifacts are stored. It has no place in the current climate and represents an ugly period of America's growth. So how do you respond to Sheree?
So, Sheree, I would say study American history. You don't understand the emotional factor of this, that we are Americans, that we, more than any other group of Americans, Southerners, black and white, have contributed a higher percentage to defending this country in the years since and in the years before. I would say to her that she needs to understand that the capital of our country is named after the biggest slave owner in Virginia, that the Declaration was written by a man who bought and sold human beings, as was the United States Constitution and the Bill of Rights. This is an ugly history, and slavery and racism is not the Southern sin, it's the national sin, the American sin. Any little bit of study can prove that. You can take those broad-based things like that. Well, you lost. That was 150 years ago, and the country healed. And it was hard to come back together. And it is just a piece of cloth. Don't empower it by saying it's something that it's not. No one is being forced. No one is being forced to hang Confederate flags or salute Confederate flags. It is a piece of history. But it is the Christian cross of St. Andrew. And such as cross of Scotland, and I think we need to understand history a little bit better. That that slavery existed in every colony and all of the young states. Benjamin Franklin owned slaves. John Hancock owned slaves. U.S. Grant owned slaves. It was an evil institution, but the American economy and Wall Street was built on that evil institution. Do you follow me? So I would say to her, don't just be sanctimonious. Study your history. Try to understand the feelings, not just of black folks who are offended by it right now as a hot-button issue. Remember that a lot of those folks and their parents sat and watched the Dukes of Hazzard for years and loved it, and it is beloved, and there was that same flag. It's in a different context, in a positive context. So we can't paint all of us with a broad brush. The flag is not going to go away. It is a good argument to say whether or not, you know, it should be on taxpayers' land. Now, that made sense, and they had that fight, and they turned it into a memorial and a museum. And I've always said, you know, everywhere there's anything like that, there should also be a monument and a statue and a memorial to those who lived in bondage. We need to understand that.
Let me take another call from Bill in Milwaukee. Hello,
okay.
Bill.
Hello, folks. My family grew up split between Milwaukee and the Deep South. My mother taught at a school that wasn't integrated until 1982. My sister lives in the high country of South Carolina, and I have cousins and brothers and sisters that live in the low country, in Charleston, in fact. And I think I agree with Bill, or Bob, I'm sorry.
Ben.
It's Ben, you almost got it.
Bill or Bob, one of the two.
One of those, yeah.
I loved you as Cooter, so whatever. Mm-hmm. I really find that I agree with a lot of what you're saying, and I think racism is just, it's here in Milwaukee. It's in South Dakota. It's in downtown San Francisco. It's everywhere. It's across the world. It's in ISIS. I mean, it's everywhere. And when we put things, hate towards anything, that's really the issue. And I think every time I drive down the interstate and I get into the South, I go past the Daughters and Sons of the Confederacy, and there's that giant Confederate flag, must be 50 feet.
That's not our flag, by the way. I know what you're talking about, those flags. That's not
right.
From the Sons of Confederate Veterans. You know, if I could, go ahead, I'll let you, we've got some
so
time.
So, Bill, your point is that removing this flag is not going to end racism.
Change a thing, in my opinion.
Go ahead. Since we have limited time, respond to what Bill had to say, Ben.
Well, I think what he's saying is that racism is everywhere in the world. It's endemic, and it always has been. It's kind of a neurosis that can become a psychosis. It comes from ignorance fed by demagoguery, and we've seen it forever, and I've fought against it forever. And, you know, in the civil rights, I saw this change, though. I was a kid. I got shot at by the Klan and sucker punched and went to jail and did all those things. But I saw an enormous change happening for the good. Most of these things that have been going on this year, didn't happen in the South. This was one sick, lone individual. And in the aftermath of this, I think there's been a rush to judgment about people like myself, who are of Confederate heritage, and we're not ashamed of that. That's just who our people were and what they did in their time. You go back another generation, their fathers were the ones who created the American Revolution, the reason we're here. Slavery has existed in America since 1619, and under the American flag from 1776 until 1865. Lincoln himself said in his first inaugural, I'm fine with it. You know, let's make it perpetual. I mean, read that. He said that. That was his feeling then. So it was a horrible institution, but the flag means a whole lot more, just as any symbol means different things to different people in different contexts. And to paint all of us with this broad brush in an emotional reaction to a horrible tragedy, I think is not the way to proceed as a society. It will divide us rather than bring us together. If people just want to be sanctimonious and say, well, they're just stupid crackers down there, these rednecks, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Well, you know, my life experience has been working for equal rights for everybody, but that has to include and respect those of us who are descended from the Confederacy, and you have to understand that 95% of the display of this flag is benign. There are millions of us descended from the Confederacy, 70 million people in America descended from the Confederacy. And, yeah, we don't see it as a symbol of hate. We know that hate groups use it and will continue to. But slavery and racism, all that stuff, not only predates the Confederacy, but it built the American economy. Read books like The Half Has Never Been Told by Edward Baptist if you want a scholarly understanding of the importance for the country, for Wall Street. America was built by the work of these folks.
And we have to leave it there because we have news coming up. Thank you very much for being with us. Ben Jones with the Sons of Confederate Veterans. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We have been talking with different guests about the meaning and the debate over the Confederate flag. We heard earlier in the hour from a historian at the American Civil War Museum about the debate over the Confederate flag. We heard from a guest in our last segment who is a spokesperson for the Sons of the Confederate Veterans, who was talking about how he believes the flag is a symbol of the heritage in the South and does not support its removal from the state capitol grounds in South Carolina. Now we will hear from a guest who thinks it should be removed. Robert Chase is a professor of history at Stony Brook University in New York. He was formerly the public historian at the Avery Research Center for African American History and Culture at the College of Charleston. And we welcome your thoughts and your questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. For 15 years, South Carolina lawmakers have refused to revisit the Confederate flags flying on State House grounds, saying that the 2000 law that took it off the dome was a bipartisan compromise. And renewing the debate would unnecessarily expose divisive wounds. But opinions changed within 5 days of the mass shooting of 9 people in a black church in Charleston. Yesterday, South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley not only called for the flag's removal, but pledged to order legislators back to Columbia for another special session if they don't deal with it themselves. The conversation has also restarted in Mississippi and Tennessee, which have symbols of the Confederate flag on their state flags. Let me welcome our guest, Robert Chase, professor of history at Stony Brook University in New York. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on your show. And to those friends and former colleagues of mine who might be listening from Charleston, I just want them to know that the nation is indeed listening.
Well, how prevalent is the Confederate flag image in Charleston?
Well, of course, Charleston is a space of history, and this is, in fact, clear, even in Dylan Roof's manifesto, that he chose Charleston, as he said, because it was the most historic site. Charleston is a space that thrives and lives in history. There is a struggle, though, within the city of Charleston over how that history is presented and who it's presenting. The street that where the Emmanuel AME Mother Church sits is the Calhoun Street, named for John C. Calhoun, who was the primary political proponent of slavery, calling it a necessary good, and a master theorist also focused on secession and the maintenance of slavery. So historic symbols in Charleston focus clearly on a Confederate heritage and a history, and yet there is no monument there to slavery, say, on Sullivan's Island. We have to understand that Charleston took nearly 60% of all of these slaves that entered the United States as the major port throughout most of the 19th century and into the, or rather the 18th century into the early 19th century. So we have to understand that. And yet on Sullivan's Island, where those slaves arrived, as one colleague told me, it was the perverse and inverse Ellis Island for Africans as they arrived into the United States in bondage. And there is no monument to that in Charleston. And yet there is a monument to John C. Calhoun. There is a monument to Wade Hampton, the Confederate general. The restaurants there are named for plantations. It is everywhere in Charleston. And the city, I will say, is slowly making its way towards creating commemorative markers say, for the civil rights movement, and recently had one made for Robert Smalls, an African-American slave who took the SS Planter during the Civil War, which was a ship, and took slaves aboard it across the lines. But it is not. It is a space that seems to focus on the Confederate history, not the history of those who were enslaved.
You wrote an opinion piece on CNN.com titled "Confederate Flag Deserves History's Harsh Verdict." What verdict is that?
Well, I think we have to understand the history of how and why the Confederate flag was used both by Southern state political governments and by the Ku Klux Klan. The flag represents what historians call the lost cause of the Confederacy, which was an ideological tradition to renew the Old South's white nobility while simultaneously conducting racial violence to erect the Jim Crow-era New South. That racial violence included lynching. It included the convict lease system that threw African Americans into a privatized prison labor system for things as small as debt peonage or trumped-up charges. It also, of course, erected the Jim Crow segregation era and intimidation at the polls and disenfranchisement. So we have to understand it in those terms. And then secondly, we have to understand its resurrection. When was the Confederate flag put on the state capitols? And in fact, in South Carolina, it was put on the state capitol by in 1962 by Democratic Governor Fritz Hollings, to mark the centennial of the start of the Civil War. So history has always been a part of this discussion, but it also was there as part of the effort of what we call massive resistance, the effort of the Southern states to resist the Brown v. Board of Education decision to integrate schools, and as a response to a burgeoning civil rights movement. And I have to say, in my op-ed, when we read Dylan Roof's manifesto, he used that imagery and tradition of the old South, the lost cause tradition, associated himself with the Confederate flag and international symbols of racism and hate, and then employed that against what he thought was a burgeoning Black Lives Matter moment. So my argument is we are living through, in many ways, the second civil rights movement, or perhaps the third, if you include the effort after or during Reconstruction. And when that occurs, the response often is to return to the Confederate flag and to do so as a means of violence and intimidation. And while we know that there is a history of heritage for those white Southerners who attach themselves to the flag, it also is a symbol of violence, a symbol of hate. And during the civil rights movement, for instance, the Ku Klux Klan waved that flag when destroying, burning, and bombing over 300 churches, including the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama, then known as Bombingham, Alabama, where four young girls were killed in a nightmare moment just 3 weeks after Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech.
Yeah, our last guest also mentioned that we should consider the many racial atrocities that were committed by the U.S. government under the American flag, and that we're being sanctimonious to focus on just the negative aspects of the Confederate flag. A listener on Facebook says the KKK flew the U.S. flag. Should we remove that too? What's your response to that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, of course, the United States as a nation and through its history has had moments where things were done in the name of that flag that we might not want to associate ourselves with, whether or not that's Abu Ghraib or the internment of Japanese during World War II. That's certainly true. However, the symbol of the Confederate flag has a very clear and real meaning when flown in the South for African Americans. And that meaning is alienation. You don't belong here. And as Dylan Roof clearly made clear in his manifesto, you need to go. It also is the symbol of violence and intimidation, flown not only at Klan rallies, but at moments when violence was going to occur, say, at an African-American church. So for all of those reasons, I think we can retain the flag in our museums. I think we can talk about it in our history classes. I think we can and should talk about its meaning, but we also need to understand this deep and long history of racial violence, and that the flag was flown as a matter of state government as part of the massive resistance movement to the civil rights movement. So it's a wonderful opportunity to talk about the civil rights movement, to talk about the history of American racial violence. But that flag stands for those things in a clear and symbolic way, in a way that the United States flag does not.
Matthew in La Crosse is with us. Hello, Matthew.
Hi, Joy. Long-time listener. My view that I feel that about the Confederate flag is pretty much what the professor was saying there, is that every time that I've seen it, I spent 5 years down in the South living down there, and every time that I had seen the Confederate flag, I don't think that there wasn't any racial bias that the person who was, well, there was racial bias, I mean, that who carried that flag. I didn't see that one person who carried that flag talked about the Confederate War. I mean, they said it was a Confederate flag, but they more or less used it towards, you know, hate, racism, you know, and their Southern pride. But my understanding is that didn't they lose the war? And in my mind is, why would the United States federal government even allow such a flag that calls for a symbol to hate?
And Matthew, I'm sorry, we have less than a minute for Professor Chase to briefly respond to that. Another listener thought it was treasonous to even have this flag flying.
Let me just say that while there is an issue of heritage for people, that part of that heritage is racial violence. The third point there is that when the Nazi regime was defeated, the Nazi flag could no longer, nor the symbol, be shown publicly in Germany. And all of those German soldiers who fought for the Nazi regime, some of them surely did not ascribe to its principles. And so we have to understand the political symbols and meaning that these flags convey, and understand that that's separate from one's service to the nation that they believe they're fighting for. So we can honor those families that feel that they are tied to the Confederacy without also honoring that flag in any other space but, say, a museum.
Thank you so much for being with us. Robert Chase, a professor of history at Stony Brook University in New York. Thanks to Judith Sears-Poisson for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.